In this podcast, I'm going to cover how to draw and teach vector diagrams. So if it's come up with Newton, you want to get a series of forces and resolve the net force on an object. So these are vector diagrams. You'll notice that this is a podcast while I'm driving. This is in order to keep the podcast rate up. So I'm driving off to have my blood bleeding test. So I have to actually bleed more easily by a factor of two or three. It's called an international bleed test, INR. And so with this mechanical component of my heart, if I don't bleed constantly enough, a clot can build up and I can have a stroke, unfortunately. So I've had, as my heart was decaying before, I was having these mini strokes in the eye. So it's quite an interesting thing to do, because you can look at them. Once you know what they are, you can sort of time them and see the size of them and plot them. That's when things weren't going well. So now everything's under control. I have to have these blood tests. I'm moving around here. Oh, just missed the lights here, so I'll be able to talk about it. So vector diagram. So a vector is a green arrow here. A vector is the is basically a imaginary line which I draw on a diagram, which indicates the direction of force. The direction of the line indicates the direction of the force. The length of the line indicates the strength of the force. And there's a head of a vector which has got an arrow on it. There's one exception, which I'll probably eventually get to, an arrow, and the start of a vector is the tail. So it's head, tail, length and line. And also the vector has with it on a diagram the label, which can often be a letter which describes the source of it, maybe resistance or stuff like that. But in general, this is a bit irritating. The vector has a subscript, or F, capital F, and then a subscript on it. Now, then basically down, when you actually write that down in an equation, that vector, which you've drawn in the diagram, goes and sits on top of the actual symbol. So you'll have a vector that you draw in a diagram and label it F12, which means the force 1 on 2. But then when you actually write that concept down in your equations, or the symbol for it, it's the little vector arrow now sits on top of your symbol, and then F subscript 1, force of 1 on 2, or 1, 2. You can actually say on initially and then drop that off so that the people say that. And force, there is a term you're allowed to use. You're allowed to say the force acting on. So acting, a force acting comes from the ancient idea of an action, which is all rather circular for it. So now we have to say what we have, an object. Now the term for an object in science or dynamics or statics, as it's called, is dynamics is when the forces are unbalanced, statics when the forces are balanced and nothing's happening. Okay, so in either of those cases, there's an object which philosophically or conceptually is a concept-bound area of matter, which we can draw a boundary in and pour it in. It's a form that's called an object. But the term a body is a different concept, or it's a slightly different concept. Oh, I'll have to move out. You don't run over me, big garbage truck. A body. I just have to remember that the last time I spoke to you is about what a body is. A body is something which is a mathematical concept. So a body is drawn, so an object is drawn in the shape of the object. A body is tends to be drawn as either a circle or square with a dot in it indicating where that body is a point, is how we're going to consider that body as a point from. And then there's other things called a rigid body, which again is described. So the physics of it is described in bodies. I'm now going to park the car, so I'll speak with you later on. Hello, this is a continuing game. I've finished my blood tests in your podcast line. That took no time whatsoever. I'm travelling up the mountains to a couple of minutes up the mountains to a place called Valley Heights. That's actually a volcanic crater, submerged volcanic crater, which is a valley, and there's a produce farm there to get our rabbit food. We've got the unthinkable thing of keeping a rabbit as a pet in Australia. Still get a few odd looks occasionally from some of the older Australians who've lived through rabbit plagues and stuff like that. Okay, it's turning times, and we're going to continue talking about vectors. Now, sort of the learning how to teach people vectors, I think comes from weapon instruction, or I suppose giving map coordinates. So there's a sort of a way of drawing. When you're teaching infantry, map coordinates are a very clear way of describing it. So we've discussed that vectors have a, this is force vectors, and we're going to apply them to a diagram, a body diagram. So we've discussed that they have a tail and a head and a length and a direction, which is a graphical analogue of the thing that you're drawing. So the important thing to do is actually indicate the orientation in your diagram. We are now up to drawing a diagram. So you may have something and that you put the north on the flat ground, you're putting up to flatwards to a book or a blackboard, you put the north on the blackboard. You then have two types of things. You draw the picture of what's going on. The picture, which is a system, generally a system of multiple interacting bodies. A body is the thing of an object, and a body is drawn in generally, is always drawn as a simple circle with a dot in the centre. The dot is the centre of mass through which all vectors are supposed to act. Now, having all vectors hooked to the object or body through the central thing means that the vectors act in such a way that it's a rigid, it's a rigid body, but it doesn't actually rotate. Because you imagine if you applied a force, say, at the top and the bottom of a disc, it would rotate, and they'd be equal and opposite forces, but that disc would rotate. So there's two types of diagrams, and they really have to be kept quite separate and drawn on separate pages or separate sections with the word body, a body diagram, body vector diagram, and a vector diagram. So the body diagram is a representation of what you actually have here. I'm just going to change lines here. Righto. So a body diagram is a representation. So you may have a brick on a table. So the brick, in this case, you're allowed to draw it as a square with a dot in it on a table. In general, you put some stroke lines to indicate that the table is a surface. Sort of a larger surface, and for the body diagram, you apply, there's two sort of grades of applying vectors. For each vector that you know about, you draw it and annotate it with an F description, maybe F, the word drag, or F1 or 2, or whatever it is. We're coming up to the turn off here. So be able to continue this briefly here. So I just have to pay attention here because there's a lot of high speed oncoming traffic. There's sort of, well, there's two, I don't know, the mountains, there's a group of villages strung across this road which crosses the Blue Mountains, and then there's another back road. There's actually two roads through the Blue Mountains. Yeah, so we've got this body diagram, and we decorate it, which I like to say the word, decorate it with appropriate vectors. So we'll come across here. We've made that without dying. Going up. And so you draw your various vectors, and essentially you have to draw all vectors applying all forces acting on an object. This is one of the things, is that forces always appear in pairs, but if you're looking at the force on an object, it's just purely the forces on that object. So if you're trying to explain a phenomena, a system phenomena, you need pairs of forces. If you're looking at an object and the dynamics of that object, or what will happen to that object, it really depends. But you have to clearly put all objects. Now, ideally, you have to put all forces on the objects with the tail of each vector starting from the very, very centre of that point that you put in the body. So this is why the body diagrams must have a centre of mass, so you can attach your vectors to it. So bear in mind, this is a schematic diagram here of it. Now, with several forces, it may become hard to do it. So there's a convention that you can draw a dashed line up, horizontally up, or vertically up and horizontally across from a vector, and then attach your body diagram vector to that. Now, this is not saying anything about how the vectors act. It's just a drafting convention to express the fact that your vector does act through that point. So even though the vector's up and away from that point, it doesn't apply a torque to that, or a turning force to it, because the vector is understood to drift down to that point. I'm going to have to stop. Oh, I can do this a bit more. So I want to next talk to you. I'll talk about the next process which goes on. Okay, the next process which goes on. I'll have to stop now. Thanks a lot. That task is done. So it must be, I suppose, odd to listen to a podcast interrupted by this. But the general idea is to get sufficient quantity of podcasts out there, and there's sufficient areas to cover. So, my overall story here is that I've been trained as an instructor, and then you modify things by looking at things to get the instruction, you know, fairly clear and crisp. And then I was going to have this heart condition pop off the mortal coil, so to speak, or get a ticket to Rookwood, as they call it. And I'm back, unfortunately. And it seems you say, oh, look, all this skill and technique, I haven't been able to communicate and get out there. And so this is the natural thing. So priorities going on top of the other one, so I've got a priority to rehabilitate, but then I'm sort of looking again at the strategy of how you communicate, and the strategy of internal strategy about how you manoeuvre fairly low priority things, like how you draw vectors out there. And so unfortunately it means that it comes into this time where you're doing a podcast and it's interrupted several times. But we're up to the idea of a body diagram. There's a body diagram and a vector diagram. Vector diagram has nothing in it yet. You have your body diagram, and you draw it there. And as I said, it can actually become rather crowded. So there's a draft convention where you can actually move the vectors along a dashed line which goes through the centre of mass point in a body. And of course, one of the things you have to explain that a body is a geometrical representation that there is an object there that takes up volume, and there's a point, so a point drawn on there which gives the center of mass. So your body diagram gets completely decorated with the different forces. In general, you'll set up a data table. Okay, we'll go pretty quickly. Normally, it's a big wait to get back onto the... it's called the Great Western Highway. but I still have to accelerate because there's a big car coming up behind me. In general, you write your lists of forces, the symbols of forces, in a column, the equals in a nice line, the decimal points, the strength of the forces, write the value of the forces or the symbolic value of the forces, or a question mark if you there's a force you have to determine, or whatever, and then after that some angles and other information and footnotes necessary. So you've got your data, a clear data table. That's just in setting up. And then you move over to something called the vector diagram. The vector diagram is a diagram of where you're allowed to move the forces about, and it is understood that the forces act at a point, but the forces are moved away from the centre of mass and connected head to tail. So what you will have is... starting off with a tail of one to the head of one, two, and you'll get a series of vectors drawn about. Now, this stage does not bear discussion or description too much in a podcast, but say if you have three vectors, the three vectors will go around and form a triangle. If they form a balanced force, if they're an unbalanced force, they'll form an open triangle. For instance, they might go two up, three across, and ten down, and that will be an open box, so to speak, and you have to close that box, and that closed box is the resultant force. So it goes from head to tail. You can add up the forces, but adding up the vectors, it goes from some head to tail of one, head to tail of two, head to tail of three. Now you have one going from the tail of one to the head of three directly. And you draw a line across for that. Now, there is a convention for it that you draw a double line, an equal sign, an extended equal sign with an arrow on that, and label that one vector R. Okay, and it generally doesn't have subscripts because I have a subscript if it's changing, but that's the resultant vector. And this is a quite important convention. These are standards. In fact, remarkably, I've been involved in a background way setting the Australian Lab Book Standard and... on the same thing, I believe this should be a standard way. If it's not accepted as a standard, it's a very good way of doing it. So you only have a resultant vector acting on your vector diagram, and it is distinct from the other vectors, which are transposed from your body diagram to your vector diagram, keeping their orientation the same, but then translating them head to tail such that they can be added up mathematically. So your vector diagram is a mathematical construct, where your body diagram is a real representation of the real world. And at the end of it, you generate a mathematical concept, which is your resultant force, your resultant vector. Now, again, we're coming to the end of this. How I got to the demonstration of this is developing a LabVIEW program where people could select their vectors, attach it to the body diagram, and then it would move to the vector diagram and produce a variable resultant vector, which would be easy to see. So then your resultant vector is the sum of forces on your left-hand side of your Newton's second law, and two, sum of forces. The forces got a little vector arrow above it, equals m, which is a scalar, a, which has got a little vector across it. So your sum of forces then equals the acceleration of your body. And then you have the mass. Obviously, in your column of data, you'll have m equals the decimal point underneath it, if it's got an exponential there, and then in units kg, so everything's written down. Now the purpose of writing everything down in that table is that examiners going through find it hard to pin you if you have it, if you've written the units units there, and having it writing first, you can get I suppose lose marks for writing something incomprehensible, some stupid unit in there that you could lose a mark, but you might lose a mark if you've actually written that, made that mistake clearly and separately up in this data table. So there's a whole lot of procedure there. Now, although that takes a little bit of getting used to, if this is well modelled for the students, in a rigorous way every single time, they can produce it. And look, in general, what can I say, possibly a third of the students, you teach them, say, in year 10 this way, and you'll suddenly see them producing it in year 12. So it's a worthwhile procedure to go. So in this podcast, we've covered the methodology of creating a vector diagram with the superposition of vectors to get a resultant vector necessary in a physics thing. Now, we've coped very much with N2, Newton 2. Newton 3 is a system diagram, and you must always, for a system diagram, for each vector, if you're invoking N3 or a momentum change or something like that, you must always have pairs of vectors with different. Again, you can have different colours, but and the two pairs of vectors must be in pairs with the direction of the vector changed. And when the direction is changed, the subscript orders, the two component subscripts, are interchanged. So if you're drawing a car, which is applying a force to the road applies a force to the car. So it would be F, car, car, road, would be one vector, and another vector would be F, road, car. Now, in the body diagram, you put all forces on the car, so you don't have to include the in your body diagram, or your body vector diagram, you don't have to include you don't have to include the balance forces. That would be stupid. So this is why your body diagram, body vector diagram, is associated with N2. So you only, on your body, apply the forces acting, working on the body, even though that body will apply equal and opposite forces everywhere. And then, of course, even when that's all said and done, there'll be, if there's a vector component, when you add up all the vectors, which is not to zero, but as a resultant, you will be able to draw that. But you draw that very clearly in your vector diagram with a double arrow. So visually, you can see that you've got two paths, a single width arrow path using the vectors lifted off your body diagram, and to a vector, resultant vector, or you can go there directly, which is the resultant, the sum of all those vectors. So I hope this helps. thanks for listening, and definitely keep on teaching science. I can guarantee, even though it's not very much appreciated, this little bit of extra care in teaching vectors really does make a difference in producing quality, confident students. Thanks for listening.